This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book has an intriguing title, Buzzkill. And our author who joins me from somewhere up the northwest, no, it's the northeast, in Maine, is our author, William Goodspeed. Welcome, sir, to the program.
Thanks, Jay. Glad to be on it.
This is a wonderful opportunity for me to talk, because we have some common interests. One, you travel to Michigan, which is an area of the country that I enjoy, and also the fact that you have written and have been writing for a number of years a satirical insert in a local newspaper in Northern Michigan, and perhaps that has led to the writing of this book, Buzzkill. Share with my listening audience a little of your background and what Buzzkill is all about.
Well, Buzzkill, for starters, is a satirical take of large companies in the United States. It pokes major fun at human resources and bureaucracy and political correctness, and the context of it is in the U.S. South, where I worked as an executive for many years, and I collected stories of crazy instances that happened in my organization and others, and I filed it away for years in a file called The Book. And after a while, I finally sat down and started writing The Book, which is a hopefully hysterical account of insane things in business.
You have your main character, which intrigued me, was a gentleman who had a Chinese background. He was Chinese, did not know the English language well, and was your main character. Is that something that was taken from real life? Tell a little of the company that he is associated with and how he ended up there.
Well, the hero of the story, one of the heroes anyway, is Dr. Chen. No one knows his first name. He just goes by Chen or Dr. Chen. And he's a PhD from Beijing who gets hired into an American company to run research and development. He ends up starting being very Chinese. He drinks oolong tea. He sets up his R&D lab to look like a Chinese temple with foo dogs outside. And he's very Chinese. Hmm. In time, he starts gravitating to all things American in the South. Dolly Parton, NASCAR, and Mountain Dew, the Holy Trinity of the South. And he increasingly becomes American, but in the process his English doesn't improve. In particular, he has trouble with plurals, as some Chinese do, and he pluralizes things that are singular and vice versa. So, for example, he would say to his boss, "Let's meet for lunch at McDonald's." And Chen actually was inspired by a real person I worked with at a large company in Maine, who's Taiwanese and brilliant, but messed up his plurals all the time.
Oh, phenomenal. You also have approached or tackled the subject of political correctness and the fact that Dr. Chen tries to hire someone, and the only culture he's really comfortable with is the Chinese culture. So he goes specifically looking for a person who is of Chinese descent and has those characteristics, right?
Yeah, well, his boss, who's the president of the division, has a playful side, and he goads Chen into specifying in a very political incorrect way what he's looking for. And he goads him into saying he wants a single male Chinese PhD, and he's not sure what religion would be best for sexual orientation. And what happens is a human resources executive hears about this and forces Chen and his boss Derek and 20 others to attend human resource sensitivity training, which ends up being so brutal even Dick Cheney would call it torture.
That's hilarious. You mentioned you have been collecting stories for a while. Did you keep a journal, or was it just a file, that things that caught your attention and struck your fancy?
I would just write down on a slip of paper or something really funny that happened, and I just put it in the file, and just one day opened the file and pulled out all these sheets of paper and had a lot of laughs. And then my imagination ran away with it, and I started making up stories and exaggerating stories and changing things and creating the plot to go with it.
You must have a great imagination, 278 pages, and probably a lot of notes that you drew from as well. This this book is a entertaining read. Is there any adventure or suspense that you've included in this in any way?
Well, the adventure is that the company that Dr. Chen and his boss Derek are running, it's a division of a company, is facing a major problem through the Great Recession. They've gone from profitability to big losses. And they're looking at fairly draconian ways to save money, like laying off people and so on. And they decide that they need to get creative and come up with new products in order to save the company. And so they do that, and they do that very successfully, and they do very creative things, like have a team-building event in Miami Beach with celebrity dress-up rollerblading scavenger hunt, which ends up being a hysterical chapter and scene in the book. But the adventure in the book is the constant tension between these playful, creative types who are doing great things and the Darth Vader types in the corporate center, human resources, finance, and elsewhere, who are constantly getting on their case for breaking the rules or doing things that are politically incorrect.
Have you always had this type of, visual interpretation of life? How has that created opportunities for you in business?
I learned about 20 years ago when I got my first fairly major general management job that the key to success in general management was to engage the emotional side of the organization and the right brain, if you will, of individuals. And I learned that empowering people and creating a fun atmosphere led to much greater success, surprisingly great success. But I also learned at the same time that our business leaders in American society, maybe worldwide, are very left-brained, very logical, very rule-oriented. So there's a constant tension between empowerment, fun, and creativity, and rules, political correctness, and so on. So to answer your question, yes, this was a big part of my growing up as an executive, a realization that it's important, but also very funny in the tensions it creates.
There is, therefore, because of your observations in life, maybe an underlying message here that in addition to the fun read, there might be some things that may impact an executive in a positive way.
Oh, absolutely. There is a strong message under it that people may not see because hopefully they're laughing so hard, but the message of let people be creative, don't worry too much about rules, empower people at all levels to be involved in creating success, and lo and behold, the organizations will be a lot more successful than they could have been.
Good advice. Bill, how long did it take you to complete this 278-page masterpiece?
It took me about 3 years, off and on.
And has it inspired you to have a sequel in the works?
Absolutely. There is a sequel in the works. It's pretty obvious at the last chapter when Dr. Chen's wedding reception, everyone ends up in the pool dancing. Mm-hmm. It's pretty obvious from that moment that there is a story coming. It's set up for a sequel, and I have started it.
Exceptional. There must have been some challenges. This is your first full-length novel. How long or what were the challenges that you had to overcome to get this completed?
Well, there are many. First was teaching myself how to write a novel, because I had never done it before. So it took a lot of trial and error to create a plot and keep the plot compelling and not let myself get diverted from a plot to have a funny story. So in my case, there were a lot of funny stories that I had to cut out because they didn't fit the plot well, although I can maybe fit them in the sequel. So that was a big challenge. And then, of course, there's a challenge of getting published and getting people to read the book only have a certain amount of time and they don't want to read things that don't interest them.
Were there any authors, or are there any authors, that maybe your style might emulate or you've been impacted by their style?
Oh, absolutely. The author that has inspired me the most by far is Carl Hyacin, the humor writer, who's written several hysterical novels. I started reading him 20-some years ago, and I always thought his style was fantastic, and I always wanted to emulate it. Also, Dave Barry.
Yes.
His novels. He's written a couple novels. Roald Dahl wrote a great comedic novel called My Uncle Oswald that was one of the funniest books I've ever read. So those three had a huge impact on me.
In your creative process, have you considered the fact that this might be a good story for video or for movies or for a scripting?
Yes, absolutely. My wife, who was my unofficial editor throughout, said to me frequently as she was reading chapters that this was written for a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly constant dialogue and action, which makes it a very quick read. But it's dialogue and it's action, like the celebrity dress up rollerblading in Miami Beach, scavenger hunt, and everyone ending up in a pool at a wedding reception, dancing, and things like that are just made for video, I think.
Bill, as an author, there probably is one scene that you have created that you just enjoy reading over and over again or reflecting on. What scene is that?
Dr. Chen ends up being very creative in leading teams, and he forms a cross-functional team to develop a new product for his company and decides to hold the meeting for the team in Miami Beach. And he and the team of about 10 go to Miami Beach. They have their meetings, and for team building after their meetings, they have a celebrity dress-up rollerblading scavenger hunt where the two teams have a list of things to collect, and they're all given a costume.
As an investigative reporter, do you personally rollerblade? Bill, how was it that athletic element got put into the novel?
Well, I just trying to think of something crazy. Miami Beach is a great thing, a great place for crazy things. And so this is imagination run wild. Mm-hmm. And then the sponsor of the event is Chen, who hires Cher, the singer, to help him manage the event. But Cher isn't really Cher. Cher is a man dressed as Cher, who looks just like Cher, except he doesn't shave his leg. And they all embark on rollerblades. And Chen, by the way, is dressed up as Don Johnson in Miami Vice. Chen ends up getting in trouble later on because the corporate R&D group decides that he's not following the rules for new product development. After an audit, there's a list of dozens of rule violations, the first of which is Chen failed to get a non-disclosure agreement signed by Cher.
Oh, boy.
So he goes through all this, the bureaucratic nightmare, while the product that his team developed is the biggest success the company's ever experienced.
That sounds exciting. Now, is your novel, do you think it would appeal to a pretty broad audience? Is it, PG, PG-13? How would you describe the contents?
I think it would. I've had high school boys read it who liked it and didn't think it was too adult. There are a couple scenes that I would say are PG-13. I think it would appeal to a fairly broad audience.
So mostly?
Mostly appeal.
Mostly fun.
People who worked in large companies.
Exceptional. Did you work from an outline, or did you just let the creative process take over and just run with the story?
I had a general story in mind, a general plot in mind about a business turnaround, and I had chapters or stories that I wanted to be part of it, and I just ordered those stories and went with the general outline, and then did a lot of cutting, editing. The book originally was probably 450 pages.
And you were able to condense it down to 278. The title of the book, again, is Buzzkill. This is a fun read. If you're looking for entertainment, listeners, this is a book that you want to get a copy of. Buzzkill, author William Goodspeed. Sir, where do my listeners get copies of your book?
It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
And how about a website? Have you developed one for your own use yet?
Yeah, there is a website called buzzkillgoodspeed.com.
buzzkillgoodspeed.com. I love that. I'm already amused and entertained just talking to you about your book. Hopefully we'll get to visit again when the next one is released, and best of luck with this one and in the movies. Keep me in mind. I make a good extra. I can stand in the background and pretend I'm doing something very easily. So good to visit with you. Thank you for joining me today.
Okay, Jay. Thank you so much.
For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on toginet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying, to 14 ways to get a baby to eat, and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled The Valentine Children's Summer Adventures. And joining me from California is author Diane Sabel Donahoe. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jay.
You have a very
happy to be here.
You have a very interesting background. In addition to being an author, you have a background as an artist in oils and other media, and you traveled extensively. How has that affected your desire to write and to publish a novel?
Well, I fell in love with this village of Carcassonne. It's really a city. My husband and I went on a trip, and we went with a group of people. And they stopped a great distance away from Carcassonne so we could see the outline of the city. And I just totally fell in love with it. I thought it was something out of a fairy tale. And then we went in and spent the day there and then left and went back to our ship. About a year later, we went back to France and we spent some time in Carcassonne thinking that I would like to write a book. And we went to Carcassonne, stayed in a hotel, and spent 3 days there. It was just charming, and we went around outside the walled city. So we were outside the walled city and inside the walled city. Well, then when I went back to San Francisco, my husband told me about a baby bird that was crying, and that left an impression on me. I saw the bird, so I combined the story about a bird and the village of Carcassonne, and it evolved into this book, which now highlights the children more than the animals.
The title of your book, The Valentine Children's, is that the name of the family, the Valentine, or is that an illustrative word that you used?
No, that is the name of the family. They're the Valentine family, and they have 6 children, and they live on a small farm outside of the city of Carcassonne.
Beautifully illustrated. You, being an artist, I'm sure, did some heavy searching to find the right illustrator for your book. How long did that take, and what is your opinion of how the illustrations turned out? I think they're charming, personally. But
yes, it took me a little while. I went on the internet, and I went alphabetically, and I put stars next to the illustrators I liked. And I felt that this illustrator was appropriate for the book. And by having an art background, I was able to determine she would be just right.
Are there any key messages that came through in your writing of this book?
Key messages? I really don't understand what you mean, Jay.
Well, is there anything about the book that a child or an adult reading it will pick up as a lesson or something else
that is
of importance?
Absolutely. Children and both adults who are interested in learning a new language and learning about a foreign culture will love this book.
And it is Life on a Farm, Small Farm in France.
Yes, it is. It's a charming book, and the children are absolutely wonderful. I've developed the children in a great way. I've spent time with them, and actually I've fallen in love with the children. So I do love the book.
The book itself, the Valentine Children's Summer Adventures. How long did it take you to come up with the concept, the imaginative storyline, and also to put it into print?
It took me, I had the idea a long time ago, and then I was involved with my artwork, and I also did some interior decorating, so I was very, very busy. And it started out with a picture book. I was going to do it for very young children, like 4, 5, and 6. And then the more I wrote, the more I felt it was for older children. And then I kept writing and writing, and then I couldn't stop. It was sort of an obsession. The children became so wonderful to me. I had to keep bringing in new adventures with the children.
You have 60 pages. That may have taken a while to complete. Did you start with an outline, or was it just the creative process just kept flowing from your imaginative?
It just kept flowing. I just would get up in the morning and just start writing, and I think I shocked my husband because he said, I didn't know you could do this. And I just kept writing, my father's major in college was journalism, and maybe I get it from him. What happened was it just developed into this more intense book, this exciting book for children.
What do you think is the most adventuresome thing that the children are involved in the book that will really grab the readers?
Well, there's a horse named Puccini, who really loves opera and helps the children search for a missing and lovable and beautiful cat. There are two cats in the book. There's a bird and there's a horse. So there's four animals. Each animal brings an adventure.
Beautiful. And why did you decide to write this book? Was it because of your experience in France in the charming city of Carcassonne?
Yes. Getting back to the question that you asked, it took me about 2 years to write the book seriously, you know, to really get into it and say this is the way it's going to be. And I'm sorry, what was your question again?
I was curious about your decision to write. Was it the charm of the countryside and of France? What really drew you into this project?
I'll tell you. I think children should start learning a language when they're very young, and also, I remember the first time I went to France when I was single, I was very uncomfortable because I didn't know that much French. And I felt that if the children fell in love with the story and kept reading it over and over again, as you do with your favorite book, and kept looking at the illustrations and kept going over the words, that eventually they would feel very comfortable with any kind of French and they'd be anxious for my next book.
Wonderful.
Which takes place a few years later.
Is it also in Carcassonne?
Yes, it's a story of the children again in Carcassonne in the early 40s to mid-1940s. This takes place in 1938.
Ah, was there a lot of research that you had to indulge in order to get all of the facts or the parts of the story that were factual correct?
No, not that much research, because we did do the research by going to Carcassonne, and we do travel so much that I didn't need to do a lot of research. I'm doing a lot of research for my next book, though.
And it's going to be the same setting, or is it a different setting?
It's the same setting. It's with the children, and they're still on the farm for a while, and it's the wartime. So things are kind of different. They're older and things have changed. It's very interesting. It's probably more interesting than this one, but I shouldn't reveal too much.
You're planning to do a trilogy, if I understand things, and you have are in the process of completing book number two. Book number three, do you think that will take as long as the first, the Valentine Children's Summer Adventures?
No, I'll tell you why. The hardest part of this book was developing the personalities of the children, and also dealing with the French, making sure that the French was correct. But once I have the foundation, which is the children, well, right now there's six children, I find that it will be very easy for a transition into the next time period.
Would you recommend this as a good book for maybe parents and grandparents to share with their children?
Absolutely. For parents and grandparents and children. It's good for anyone who wants to read about a charming fairy tale village in France and learn some French along the way. And it is the charming village that really helps, too. It's just delightful. You'll see beautiful pictures of it in the book.
It is beautiful. Were there or have there been any opportunities for you to share this publicly with a maybe a reading group or a school group, or has anyone given you any feedback on the storyline?
I did have this young girl read it a while back ago, and she loved it, and I asked her if it was too difficult regarding the French. Of course, she was highly intelligent. She speaks three languages. She said, no, not at all. But I think that I think it'll be easier if a parent reads it to the child, you know, a child, let's say, six or seven, and then the child will want the parent to read it again and again. And then the child, hopefully, will be interested in French because the story is so charming. It's the story. I think you have to make learning a language interesting. Otherwise, it's too hard for kids. Especially during this age where they're involved with computers and other things like that, and so competitive about getting ahead in school. I think that this will help them tremendously.
I've had some feedback from one of my staff members. They just absolutely adore your book and the illustrations. Of course, the staff member is also an artist, so that impressed them greatly. You've done a wonderful job with this. If you were to introduce this book to my listeners and just tell them in your own words how and why they should get a copy of this particular read.
Because it's so engaging. It's so heartfelt. It's such a treasure. It's so exciting. And I think that it's just one of the most delightful books. It's something everybody should read about, and it's true to form. There is a charming village in France. It looks just like a fairy tale village, and I think that everyone who goes there just says it's just absolutely divine.
Any short-term goals beyond getting this out into the public recognition?
Well, starting my second book to finish it.
Wonderful.
Right now I'm doing a lot of research on the second book. It takes time.
Look forward to talking to you about that when it's completed as well. Again, from my perspective, beautifully done illustrations. The storyline is charming, and of course the setting is spectacular. The title of the book is The Valentine Children's Summer Adventures. My guest, Diane Sabel Donahoe. Where can my listeners get a copy of your book, Diane?
My listeners could get a copy through Archway Publishing Company, also Amazon.com already has it available for sale, and there has been one review on it, and Barnes & Noble. So I guess it would be Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
They can also do a search under the title of the book, The Valentine Children's Summer Adventures, and find a copy on the Internet or at their local bookseller. They can also order it in. Let me spell for my listeners your pen name. Diane is spelled D-I-A-N-N-E. Sabel is spelled S-I-B-E-A-L, last name Donahoe. Donahoe, D-O-N-A-H-O-E. I think I've got it.
Yes, and also I have a website. It's www.diane, D-I-A-N-N-E, and then donahoe altogether.com. So they can get on my website, they can see what the book looks like, and they can read maybe the first three pages.
Exceptional. Thank you for joining me today and sharing the background story of your adventures and how you came to write this wonderful, wonderful tale. Thanks again for joining me today.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Bye.
For Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Many children suffer from the challenges with attention and hyperactivity, known as ADHD. Drugs used to treat this condition, such as Ritalin, are strongly addictive. They may have an immediate calming effect, but also come with severe side effects, and they lack the positive outcomes in the long run. My guest today is the author, Dr. Harold Blomberg, who joins me to talk about his new book titled The Rhythmic Movement Method and to explain why he believes that rhythmic movement is more useful than drugs in treating conditions such as ADHD. Welcome to the show, Harold, and thank you for taking the time to join me. Now, first of all, could you explain briefly for our listeners exactly what ADHD is and how it affects children?
Well, that's a condition which has been invented by psychiatrists, and it deals with attention deficits, problems with attention, and problems with hyperactivity and problems with impulse control. Actually, it's diagnosed with a lot of questionnaires, and in my experience, almost any child nowadays can get this diagnosis, because most children have some of these problems. So I don't think it's... but of course, I'm aware that there are some children who have severe challenges with hyperactivity and impulse control, and they may be a burden for teachers and for parents also. But this is my simple explanation about what it is.
Now, in my brief introduction, I mentioned one of the drugs that's used for treating conditions such as ADHD, which is Ritalin, which I believe, as well as having some serious side effects, also doesn't really deal with the problem in the long term. What are your views on that?
Now, they may have an effect in the short term, and they may make the children calmer and seemingly more focused. But in the long term, there are several studies that have not been able to notice any helpful outcome from this kind of treatment. And actually, they may have negative effects in the long term. So, if you are going to have this, use this treatment, I think they should be only used for short periods.
Now, you describe your book as being a revolutionary approach to improved health and well-being. Now, with your experience as a psychiatrist in Sweden, and I believe you've been teaching and you've been working with rhythmic movement training for about 30 years. How did this lead you to write the book, and what was your main motivation and inspiration behind the book?
Well, my main motivation is to tell about my experience to work with these rhythmic movements and how helpful they are. And I must say they are revolutionary to many people because they change their lives completely. I was very much impressed when I learned these movements first time. Working with Kerstin Linde, who developed these exercises by observing small infants doing baby movements. And she used these exercises for children who had cerebral palsy and movement disability, and they were not able to speak, they were not able to move about on the floor, they were not able to eat, and they were totally handicapped, and they were given no hope from doctors. And then I witnessed how some of these children actually learned to move about on the floor, learned to crawl, learned to walk, learned to speak. And then I had to question everything I had learned in my training to become a doctor and see that there are huge possibilities to help people. And this I have been trying to do during the last 30 years. And I must say I have been successful to some degree.
Now, when you were writing the book, you obviously had a purpose and a readership and, you know, being a help book in some respects. Who did you write the book for, and who do you feel that it appeals to?
Well, I wrote the book for parents, actually, of these children who have severe handicaps, because I meet so many of these parents. I know how disappointed they are in the normal healthcare system, how little help they get, how angry some of them are. And I wrote it to give them some hope and some alternative ways to help their children. And of course, I also wrote this book for professionals who work in the health system, because especially physiotherapists and occupational therapists can benefit very much from using these simple exercises. And I wrote it also for teachers. I would say I would be very happy if physical education teachers would read this book and apply some of the exercises, because then they could really help a lot of children, not only with motor difficulties and so on, but also with cognitive difficulties. And I wrote it for preschool teachers, kindergarten teachers, who would benefit. They can actually apply these exercises in preschool. So that, and last, I wrote it for anyone who wants to improve their own health and well-being. Actually, even if you function quite well, you can actually improve your health and well-being by using this simple method.
Now, what is the one thing above everything else that you would like readers of your book to learn or to take away from reading your book?
Well, I think the main focus on this book is about the importance of the spontaneous rhythmic baby movements, that they are actually necessary for developing our brain, including our motor abilities and emotions and mental faculties. So we can start to look at the job babies do get their brain to work by doing all these movements. And the rhythmic movement method is based on these movements. So if you haven't done these movements as a baby, it may not be too late. You can always repeat them later on. So this is what I would like the reader to know. And this is something which I think most doctors are quite unaware of, because most doctors believe that the brain creates movements and not the other way around. I think that the movements actually develops the brain.
Now tell me, in your own words, how you feel that this book differs from other books on similar topics, and what sets it apart from the crowd?
Well, I would say that there are a few books who deal with the early movement patterns of infants, and the primitive reflexes also, and deal with how to integrate primitive reflexes. What is special with the rhythmic movement method is actually the rhythmic component of these movements, because Kerstin Linde was able to observe how important the rhythm is for our development of the brain, and how it makes such a strong impact and gives us such a strong stimulation to the brain. So by using the rhythm that infants spontaneously do, they very quickly can integrate reflexes. And this is why the method is so very effective to work with for older children and adults.
Now, I've mentioned earlier on that in your work as a psychiatric and also with the rhythmic movement training, you do have a lot of knowledge and experience in the topic of the book, but it still must have been a challenge for you. What did you find the most challenging and rewarding part of writing this book?
Well, since I'm a doctor, I want to explain why these movements are so important. And of course, there was no such knowledge. I couldn't find any knowledge about these movements, that the baby movements were necessary for development of the brain. So I had to make a lot of research to construct a plausible theory about how it works, and I learned very much about it. But then I feel this has been a very rewarding project for me, because now I can explain it in a very simple way, and people can easily understand it, and it's nothing mysterious about it.
I believe that our listeners can find it more and visit you online. And would you like to give them the website addresses?
Yes, of course. My website address, there's a lot of information there in my website, blomberrmt.com. It's in English.
Now, is there anything that we haven't covered here that you feel is important that you would like listeners to know about your book?
I also would like to add now, I remember, that I'm going to the U.S. to teach people who can, instructors who can work with the rhythmic exercises. So you can find on one of the websites how to get in touch with instructors who work with these exercises. And I'm probably going to, I've written a book about autism, and we'll translate it into English and publish it next year, I think.
Well, we look forward to hearing more about that. The book is published by Lulu and can be purchased online direct from their website at www.lulu.com and from all other good book stockists. Once again, many thanks to Harold for joining us on the show. This is Rick Bell for Toginet Radio. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Okay.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.